Welcome to Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. In this episode, we bring on our biggest guest yet,
the Locks,
the football team, Mike Locksley.
Get locked in, baby.
As always, the best Max is ahead. Marza. As always, gonna talk about some sports and see what we got upcoming this week. I'm Brendan Wiesel.
Sam Jane.
Michael House.
Kevin Ireland.
Missing a member due to some occupations, but Brendan, Mike,
we should be back.
This is going to be a pretty cool episode. I think it's a big step for us, and I'm really excited for people to be able to hear Coach Locksley in a less formal situation and kind of get to know their head football coach as fans. So.
Absolutely. So,
Coach Locks.
Right. So, Coach, when you first entered Maryland in 2019, you were taking over a program that not only was under a rebuild, but the athletic department kind of too, with Damon Evans in his first years as the AD. What was that process like, rebuilding the culture of Maryland football? And what were your first actions as the head coach?
Yeah, man, that was such a long time ago. And obviously was very fortunate that Damon chose me, or decided that I was the guy to lead this program, which, you know, anybody that knows me knows the affinity I have for Maryland football. Growing up a Terp fan, growing up in the shadows of old Byrd Stadium, now Maryland Stadium, spent a lot of Saturdays here rooting for the mid-80s Terps that had great success. But, you know, coming in, obviously, there were some major things we had to get fixed, and it starts with culture. And you know, the first thing I went about doing was getting to know the players. I can remember my first day on the job. I wore my seat out in my office because I did what was I call it speed dating for three straight days before I had to head back to Alabama to prepare for the playoffs. I met with just about every player in our program, and I spent about 10 to 15 minutes with each player. And I asked two questions. I asked, what do you love about being a Maryland Terrapin, and what things don't you like? And I was able to build a list of the things that were positives about the program, while also being able to start unearthing what some of the major issues would be. And after I was able to go through about 3 days of those meetings from 7 a.m. till 9 o'clock at night, getting through the whole roster of the team, I had a pretty good idea of what maybe some of the things were that I needed to attack first. And I kind of put a red, yellow, and green dot next to it. Obviously, those red issues were things that had to be addressed as soon as possible. The yellow issues were things that I could get to once I kind of got through the reds, and greens were things that maybe didn't need immediate attention. And so as I headed back to Alabama, I was able to kind of put my thoughts together that, you know, once we were done with the playoffs and the championship game, how I needed to attack once I stepped foot back here in College Park.
What were some of those things that you first attacked? Obviously, you highlighting them, and then you got on campus. What was like one of the first things you did to get going?
Yeah, I think the very first thing was that there were some trust issues. We all know the story of what this team went through in 2018. Their head coach was suspended. They had an interim coach. They lost a brother in Jordan McNair. They dealt with a lot, and they really felt that there was an issue of trust, and between player to coach, coach to player, administration to player, you know, and it went across the board. And so, as you know, and you guys understand, as you guys have become young men, trust isn't something you can make happen. You have to earn it, and you earn it by spending the quality time and getting to know each individual person for who they are. We did a bunch of exercises here. You know, we created an exercise we called the three H's, where after every workout, we had a player stand up, or a coach or a staff member stand up and tell who their hero is, what hardships they've been through, and what the highlight of their life has been. And when we went through these three H's, we learned a lot about this team, because when you know a person's story, it makes it a lot easier to get to know them and understand what makes them tick and what motivates them. And so for us, we tried to build a family environment instead of a team environment. And we did it one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, one exercise at a time. And it was really one of the first things we did was try to build trust.
Yeah, I think that that's a super important factor. And I think you see that with former players of yours at every stop you've had where they've kind of, you know, you keep that connection. And I think trust really helps with that. But I was going to ask, you know, I read an article where, you know, when you were at New Mexico State, obviously things didn't go according to plan. Or New Mexico, sorry. Things
didn't work. Don't worry about it. They would get so mad if you said I was at New Mexico State.
All right. I'll make sure if I ever make my way out to New Mexico, I will keep that on the state out of there. But, you know, you kept a journal of like things that you learned, things you wanted to do better, things you struggled with. And then I wanted to know, when you got here, what have you kind of drawn from that, and where have you seen yourself make the biggest improvements as a coach, and not only in that, but also as a leader of men? Like, where have you struggled in the past, and now you're, you know, you think you've taken steps in those areas?
Yeah, let's rip the Band-Aid off, man. You bring New Mexico up, and I tried to erase that from my hard drive, but one of the things I learned, first of all, is to own it. You know, as a head coach, I led a program, and I did not do a great job as a leader. Wasn't prepared for everything that involves being a head coach. I knew football. I knew how to recruit. I didn't understand HR. I didn't understand coming into a new program where I replaced what was a legend in Rocky Long, and understanding what I was coming into. And so, you know, that journal, one of the first things, here's what I learned first and foremost, was I worked my whole life because I wanted to be a head coach, and New Mexico gave me that opportunity. And the minute I sat in the seat, like I'm sitting in right now as the leader of that program, it was like drinking water from a fire hydrant. Every day I was dealing with a major issue, whether it was players, staff, recruiting. I mean, there's just so many things. And it's like having a child. I tell people, you know, you can prepare for your first child by reading baby books and getting the nursery set up, and you think everything's going to work really smoothly. And then when that baby's born and it comes home kicking, screaming, and pooping, natural reactions happen. And that experience, you can't pay for, because the next child I had a way better understanding of what to expect. And so when I look at New Mexico, one of the quotes I always use that Debbie Yao, one of my mentors, shared with me is that failure is not final unless you don't learn from your mistakes. And so that journal where I wrote, the first thing that was in that journal was have fun with the job, because I got that job and it's like the top of the mountain where you reach the top of it and you get up there and it's like, you know, you don't enjoy the journey. You don't enjoy being at the top. And every day was like, as I say, fourth and one with the ball at the minus 35. And so when I got this job, the first thing I was going to do was enjoy it, enjoy being around the kids, enjoy being around the staff I put together, enjoy the tough, hard things that come with this job. The next thing I did was learn from the mistakes of my hiring. You know, my first job, I hired every one of the young GAs that ever worked for me. And I had a very inexperienced staff along with an inexperienced head coach. And, you know, I had a couple veteran guys, but, you know, it starts with me and being a tremendous leader is owning the mistakes you made. And obviously I made a lot of mistakes at New Mexico, but what I've done is taken those mistakes. And now as the head coach here at Maryland, I can almost see the problems before they come, because it's the second time for me. And I have a more of a comfort level of who I am as a coach. And after spending time with people like Randy Edsall as the head coach here, when I came back here after New Mexico, and then having a chance to work for Coach Saban, as I like to say, I was able to sharpen my sword to where when I got this opportunity again here, I felt like I had the tools needed to handle and manage it. So to me, from going from job one as a head coach to job two, those failures, I've learned from them and been able to take them and turn them into successes here so far.
kind of speaking about tools as a head coach and your relationships with players, you're known as one of the best recruiters in college football. We had Scott McBrien on a couple months ago, and he told a story about how when you were trying to recruit him to come to Maryland, you told him to come on as a punter and he would be able to play scout team QB just to get him a shot at being the starting QB. Do you have any other funny recruiting stories? And what is like your approach to trying to pitch a player to come to the University of Maryland?
Yeah, the thing I always say when you get the label or tag of being a great recruiter is that you've got to have a great product to sell. And I'm one of the people that really believe in this place, the name behind my head here, Maryland. Growing up in this area and understanding now 15 seasons of working on this campus, the strength of our academics, the strength of the people that, you know, educate our players, the strength of the administrative staff and support of our loyal fans and supporters are what make this place special. And so it's an easy sell for me because I believe in the product. I've seen, you know, like I said, for 15 years, the power of what playing here and getting a degree from here can do for your life. And I've seen this uniform and the name on the front of that jersey change the lineage of families. And so that's an easy sell for me. I'm a big believer that people buy from you if they like you. And to me, liking you is being doing what you say you're going to do. And anybody whose couch I've sat on as a coach here at Maryland and representing this university, I've tried to make sure that the things I say I'm going to do, which is help them become the best version of themselves academically, athletically, and socially. I feel pretty confident that I've done that. And I use those experiences of what I call third-party validation of the former players that I've had a chance to coach. I allow them to speak on what the experience of playing under me or being recruited by me and what it's done for them, and it's worked. There's no magic potion that allows it to happen. I'd say the funniest story for me in recruiting was the Vernon Davis recruitment. You know, Vernon was one of the top recruits in the country. I felt pretty confident when he was coming out of Dunbar, D.C., that we were going to have a chance to recruit him to Maryland. He was one of those big receivers, kind of a tweener between a receiver tight end. And all arrows were pointing toward him coming to Maryland. And then 2 weeks before signing day in February, you know, he took an official visit to the University of Florida, and they had just signed a quarterback by the name of Chris Leak, and he and Chris played together in the Under Armour All-American game back then, which was a big thing, and Chris did a really strong job of trying to recruit him to come to Florida. And so as the 2 weeks before signing day winded down, all of a sudden Vernon was not answering my calls. I went by the high school to see him, and he was never around. I couldn't find him. I go see his high school coach, and he said, I don't know where he is. And so he was basically missing in action. And as a good recruiter, you always want to know, you know, where they hang out or what's their schedule. And he had just taken a job at Quiznos, really probably about 10 minutes from campus here, and was working in the kitchen of a Quiznos doing sandwiches and, you know, cutting meat back in the back. And I can remember finding out what shift he was working, and I pull up to the Quiznos, and, you know, he's not at the front counter, and I kind of hop over the counter. I go in the kitchen, and he's back there like, so are you not answering my calls? What's going on? And he was just shocked to see me in the kitchen of Quiznos after ducking me out for about a week and a half. And we spent about an hour talking in the kitchen about how he had made a great decision with coming to Maryland and why it was important for him to maintain that commitment that he made. And he ended up coming to be a Terp. So it worked out great. And I became a big Quiznos fan after that.
That's a hell of a story. That's some good tracking down, some good investigation you did there.
You need to be an art major, investigative journalism right there. That's good.
It's part of what recruiting is. I know you throw around a lot of slogans, you know, maximize it, the best is ahead, staying locked in. Where do those come from?
You know, I live them. You know, maximize it is a little bit, you know, if you come ever to visit my office, you'll see I have these hourglasses all over the place in my office. And for me, in 2017, I lost my son, Miko, who was murdered in Howard County. And I was one of those guys that maybe didn't always respect father time and understanding just how valuable time was. And so when I took this job here at Maryland, and you know, I thought about what was the foundation for me and who I am as a person. Those hourglasses signified to me the respect time, and that at the end of the day, we're not guaranteed tomorrow, and you can't spend too much time looking in the rearview mirror about yesterday, and that we want to live today like a rock star, like there is no tomorrow. And so maximize it for me signified, I am going to maximize every ounce of time that I'm given in the course of a day. And when I lay my head down at night, I'm going to feel comfortable that I didn't waste any time and I maximized each and every minute of today. And if I don't get tomorrow, I'm okay with it because I took full advantage of today. You know, it's called the present because it's a gift and we need to enjoy it. And so maximize it is a, you know, kind of in honor of my son, Miko. When it comes to being locked in, you know, you use that term all the time. Obviously, it's a play on my last name. Everybody calls me Locks. But being locked in is it's a feeling of knowing that I am focused on, like, this conversation here. There were times when I was a coach and I didn't respect time a little bit, where I'd be worried about, I'm doing this interview, but in 20 minutes, I got to meet with Coach Simon, who's waiting outside my door. So I'm not totally locked in here because my mind is all over the place. Well, what I learned to do was, the word locked in for me was my cue word for, hey, stay where your feet are. Be right here where we are. We're doing this podcast and I'm going to give y'all my undivided attention. I'm going to give it the attention that it deserves and not let myself deviate from what's important now. And that's what locked in means for me. And then obviously the best is ahead is in honor of a dear friend, mentor who passed away, that Trevor Moad. Trevor was a guy I used as kind of a life coach / guy that helped me with motivating my team. And he's a guy we used at Alabama, and he passed away recently. And he would always end all of our conversations with, hey, Locks, the best is ahead for you, man. And so it became, after year one for me, a way to tell me that we're always evolving. We're always working to be better than today. And so know and understand that the best version of me, the best version of Maryland football, the best recruit, the best of everything is ahead of us, and understand that you work toward that.
Yeah. I think that that's like, I think a lot of coaches sometimes can have slogans, but there's not a ton of meaning behind them. And I think that's pretty cool to hear, like the idea of the maximizing.
We call that sloganeering. You see it somewhere, you read it, and it's all of a sudden it becomes yours. But you know, these have definitions for me.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So every time we bring on a guest, we kind of want to get to know them a little more outside of, you know, their job or what they do. And so we have, you know, this kind of rapid fire segment where I just give you a bunch of questions in a row and you just kind of have to answer, you know, what's off the top of the dome. So
whatever. Not responsible for what comes out of my mouth, but let's go.
Let's do it. All right. All right. Favorite post-game snack?
Chick-fil-A. I mean, it's a staple. It's been here for every year I've been here. We have must have a contract with it, but those Chick-fil-A nuggets, I load up. I do the Polynesian sauce, and
yeah,
I like the spicy. I try to do spicy Chick-fil-A sandwich, but Chick-fil-A post-game, it's waiting on my desk.
All right, favorite movie character?
Man, favorite movie character. I mean, I say Rocky, man. I grew up in the Rocky generation. One, two, three. You know, Creed is coming out now.
Yeah.
Ways about the underdog. I've never been the first choice. You know, I finished second for the most influential black coach in college football. So I always like keeping that chip on my shoulder a little bit. And Rocky, man, he overcomes adversity. And I like the Rocky series and now in the Creed series with Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. I was going to say, I thought you were going to say second most handsome man behind Michael B. Jordan, but
it's coming. I think I'm first. I saw something on y'all on the website that I was the most handsome coach in college football. Especially with the Santa Claus beard.
Yep, I like it. Best dressed player, former player, current player you've ever had?
Well, I'd say it goes to somebody like a Jacorian Bennett here.
Okay.
He was pretty fly. You know, Rakim had kind of the smooth drip. He was the Prada man. He, you know, that NIL money must be good because every time I turned around, he had on some Prada. I say Jacorian looked the clean. He looked really clean because he was a suit guy. He wore a bow tie. Okay. You know,
I saw you at the Eagles game, man. That was some fly shit right there. Devontae Smith and Judy was calling you out on Twitter, man. I was like, what is
that? So I think that, let's get that cleared up. So, you know, Judy wasn't calling me out like he was making fun.
Yeah, I thought he liked it.
He literally said, like, hey, man, who's styling you? And you know
what? Yeah, that's tough.
But the problem is like, I also got a call from Kevin Plank. And it basically said, man, are those Jordans you got on? What's going on? So I was a little bit out of uniform, and I got to create a Finsta, I guess, to, you know, and put my personal pictures on my Finsta and not on my Maryland Instagram because I was out of uniform. I got a little Palm Angel Under Armour on right now, so I'm trying to – I try to keep it, you know, subtle fly, subtle jiggy.
Yeah, you got the smooth drip.
Big boy swag is what I call it.
I was thinking you were going to say Devonta Smith for best dress.
You know what? Also, now I got to give – now, Smitty didn't dress like that initially.
Okay.
And I can tell you that I play a major role in Smitty's award that he received because one of the things I do for my players once they graduate is I buy them their first custom suit. And I have a suit guy named Brian Alexander who's one of the top designers, and he's actually designed Smitty's – Heisman Trophy suit with the little karate thing on, you know, or the brown velour. Right. He did the karate suit thing with the first round draft pick. And so I can take a little small credit for Smitty being the best dressed player in the NFL because we share the same suit designer, but mine is a little bigger and a little more boxier than the slim fit that he rocks.
No worries. Most overrated food item?
Mayonnaise. I'm done with it, man. I'm out of that business. That thing, that was so nasty. It smelled bad. It was nasty. I apologize to the Carolina Panthers that I left the hat, the shirt, the drawers, the pants, the shoes. I took a shower in it and just left it there in the head coach's locker room. So hopefully somebody get in there and get it out before the next visiting team comes in because it did not smell very good. But I'm out of the mayo business.
Guy on your coaching staff, including you, that's the best hooper?
I don't know if y'all know, but and I tell people don't let the belly fool you, but old Coach Locks played a little Division I basketball at Towson. You know, I was a football basketball guy there, and I would venture to say that, you know, there ain't very many guys on this team. Man, I've signed players from this vicious jump shot that I have now. I had two knee replacements this summer, so I'm not jumping like I used to, but I can still put the ball in the hoop.
Okay, and then last one, what would you say, you kind of answered this already, but who's your biggest role model?
My biggest role model? Man. You know, I'm a big, big fan of I'm a big fan of Malcolm X, and I'll tell you that I know this is rapid fire. So, you know, a lot of people have Malcolm X kind of pegged wrong because, you know, he's Muslim, obviously. Right. He studied under the Nation of Islam. But one of the things that Malcolm X did that I think is so hard for people to do, and this is why I have a lot of respect for him, was that when he educated himself on what true Islam was, he came back and changed his views. He said, hey, I was wrong on some things and didn't agree with some of the principles that maybe he was taught before he actually studied and learned on his own. So he educated himself and was able to come back and change his views on a lot of things. And, you know, he's a guy, when I read his autobiography as, you know, as a college kid, and I didn't know that, but to be able to be one way, educate yourself, learn, and come back and say, hey, I was wrong on some things. That to me, that takes great leaders have the ability to say I was wrong. And I really had a lot of respect for him being able to educate himself on issues that maybe he had an opinion on initially. He said, hey, he went to Mecca. He learned what true Islam was all about, peace, love of all people. and he came back and changed his views.
Yeah, I read his autobiography too. It's really good. I'm from Michigan, and I had no idea he like grew up there. So that was also pretty stunning to me. But that's a really good. Even though that wasn't the last part wasn't rap, but I'm glad we got that because that's super interesting. Mike, you want to take us away?
Yeah. So real quick, one more question, a quick one, because we did this segment earlier on the podcast. If you have to have a starting five of college nicknames for any team, so like we're saying like the Terrapins, not Testudo, who would be your starting five of college nicknames?
College nicknames. So I like the Fighting Illini because it gave respect to the Illiniwek tribe. I like the Salukis. Down in Southern Illinois, that's a pretty cool name. Obviously, Terrapins. You know, we'd be number one in my book because there's only one really true Terrapin, and they're indigenous of the Chesapeake Bay. The Crimson Tide, you know, had a lot of success there. I'm a little biased, and then I love the Black Knights of West Point.
That's a good one.
Time on the banks of the Hudson. River there in West Point, New York, and the Black Knights of West Point is a pretty cool name.
So that's a really good list. Brendan here on this podcast decided to go in a completely different direction, and he started pulling D3 logos that were all natural disasters because he said, "I'm taking all of y'all out." So
okay, I like it.
I was proud of my pick, so I'll stand by him.
Well, thank you so much, Coach Loxley. We appreciate you for hopping on and giving us some really cool insight into you and the program as a whole. Good luck with the rest of the offseason. Hopefully they don't got you too busy because you got to enjoy it a little bit. But thanks again.
Coaches that we had for Terrific Terp, because Brendan, that's been one of the better segments we've heard. And you got another one this week. So take us into
Terrific Terp. We talked a couple weeks ago about the head coach, one of the first coaches of the men's team. Let's talk about one of the first coaches of the women's team, Dr. Sue Tyler. Only Division I coach to win an NCAA championship in two different sports.
At the same time? Or, like, she was coaching at the same time?
Just about. So she coached lacrosse for 16 seasons, winning the national championship in 1981 and 1986. Coached field hockey for 14 years, winning the national championship in 1986. Winning records in both sports. It's incredible. Nowadays, I think it would be impossible because of the way recruiting works, the way transfers work, the way the whole programs have developed, the way you have a media presence. 40 years ago, not quite. And it's just incredible that you'd be able to be at the head of two programs, two coaching staffs, and win. So that's major kudos to her.
That's an awesome, awesome story because I just think it also shows like – Maryland wasn't unwilling to try stuff, right? Like you had a women's coach who kind of was almost a pioneer for how we look at the games today. And I just think that that's a really, really incredible story and good on Brendan for finding it as he always does. Proud of my investigative journalism friend. But yeah, it's been really cool to hear about all these terrific Terps, but there are other schools out there, Mike. And other schools, I don't know if they rival the Terps with mascots, but there are a lot of really cool ones, and that's going to be our top five of the week. Mike, take it away.
Had a heck of an episode. Let's see it, Mike.
So we're all going to do a starting five of college nicknames.
So to clarify, this is the nickname, not the mascot.
Nickname, not the mascot. So, for example, we'd be taking Terrapins, not Testudo.
Also, score update, currently 64-52 Ohio State. Can chalk that one up to an L, I would guess, for Maryland.
All right, so now they are 2-8 on the road on the season.
Sorry to interrupt the segment. Keep going, Mike.
And it's not only to D1. Brendan, I assume.
I mean, this guy, he always is coming up with some random ass
he
stuff.
He has some crazy school that he's going to bring up.
Yeah, he's going to pull up.
So what's the order for draft?
Massachusetts A&T Commerce has the lightsaber school.
He's going to pull out a community college.
All right.
I can start if we want. If we want to get it going. So starting.
Snake draft?
Yeah.
So go. Right. We'll just go Sam, Brendan, Mike.
Okay.
Round.
This is how I'm going to get it started.
In the third person.
And I think that this is a really, really, really elite pick. And I hate to do it because I hate this school, frankly. Growing up where I grew up and who I was a fan of. But a Spartan is really going to take a lot of things. And they have swords, they're muscular, they're you know, ancient warriors. So I'm taking the Spartans as my number one pick.
All right, that's a solid pick.
Any criticism off that, Brendan? Because you're kind of looking a little suspect there.
I feel like there's other ancient Greek mythology nicknames.
Okay, well.
That could rival
that's
them,
fair, but I know I'm not going with the freaking Division 7 school that Brendan's going to go
so
with.
Here we go.
This is going to be crazy.
Britannica, you look at the top six world's deadliest natural disasters.
Are you kidding me?
1931, flood. A river in China killed 50 million people, and because of that, I'm going to go with the Tulane Green Wave.
Wow.
Well,
so he's taking not even an animal or a person. He's taking a natural disaster. This is a guy who's really got something special going on in the left side of our podcast room. Great pick, Brendan. Mike, give us your number one.
Whew. This is tough. I do get a second pick after this, so
just give it to us right away. Bang, bang. Bang it out.
I think I'm going to – so, number one, I'm going to take the Fighting Irish. I think it's a tough nickname.
That's a good
– that little leprechaun can really pack a punch.
I think my Spartan's going to smash it, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, to rival the Spartans, I'm going to take the Trojans. It's a double entendre.
That's a good pick.
It is spyware on your computer, also Greek mythology. So
you also have a Trojan horse.
That is another type of Trojan. We're going to pass it off to Brendan.
Defeat the Spartan. So that's a good pick, Mike. I like those two. That's kind of a different scale, but I think those are two solid picks too.
I got two fighters on my team now.
Yeah, you do. You really do. And you have a good rivalry too. USC Notre Dame, that's a rivalry.
There's nothing more dangerous. Whenever you hear you're in the water and you say, oh my God, you're in the water, which my first team, starting five, are putting together, team's going to pack a real punch, right? They say, there's lightning, you got to get out of the water. And because of that, I'll be taking the Lehman College Lightning. Lehman College is from New York City. That is my second pick.
Lehman College. This is awesome.
They are in Division III, and they compete in the City University of New York Athletic Conference, CUNYAC.
Great pick. Don't know how that's a school. And it really should be the Lehman Lemons, but that's a story for another day. I'm actually going to go with I thought Mike was going to take this, but I'm going to go back-to-back here. I'm going to get the Washington State Cougars. I think Cougars are an elite animal. They're really one of the more deadly ones out there, and I think that that's just really gonna do a trick for me as my animal. And then I'm going to follow it up, and this is one of my favorite logos / nicknames in all of sports, the TCU Horned Frogs. The Horned Frogs are that's an electric name. It's a great,
solid, very solid.
It's a great mascot, but the Horny Frogs are really, really, really good.
Sam has my draft board. He definitely has the Google Doc.
The thing is, even if you're in all of those, if you suffer a natural disaster, you're screwed. And because of that, the next, if you look at the same list that Britannica provided for me,
the next five
things are all earthquakes. And so Wilmington College Fighting Quakes. I wonder if that's Quaker. Yeah, it's Quaker.
Oh!
I just, that's a bad pick, but.
Oh.
Like, who's the guy? William Penn, the Quaker.
Oh, yeah, that's Quaker, but it's in the name.
Quakers are generally peaceful, Brendan, so I don't know if that's a good pick.
Not my best Quake. Mascot's the Quaker, man. That was a bad pick.
Yeah, that's not great.
Ohio Athletic Conference Division III next.
Yeah, we're gonna cut that and that's gonna ruin his board. Mike, you can save yours. Give us your third pick.
We're gonna go a little supernatural here. We're gonna take the Wake Forest Demon Deacons.
Oh, that's a really good solid pick. It's really solid.
I feel like this is a steal in round three right now. Yeah, finish it off, I'm gonna go to natural disaster route and take the Miami Hurricanes.
That's really good too. Those are two strong picks. Brendan, please give us something that we know. Your fourth pick.
Okay. With my fourth pick, I will be taking the Copper Mountain College Fighting Cacti.
And that's not what I thought it was going to be.
Well done. Oh, they might.
No,
they might not be division. They're in the ACC JC.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what that is.
High school too.
Okay. Spike the Fighting Cacti. I don't know. Located in Joshua Tree, California. Are we going to?
No, that's fine.
Are we going to veto that pick?
You stick with it.
Okay, we'll keep it.
Stick with it.
Let's recap our teams after this. I'm guaranteed that I'm going to win.
Okay. And then I will take, for my final pick, I really like this one. It's close to our heart. It's something that you really can't destroy. And I'm going to go, actually, not destroy, because it's really cool. And I'm going to go with the buffalo, the Colorado buffalo.
You can destroy a buffalo with a tsunami.
Yeah, I was going to originally go with the Stanford trees, but I
thought you should have done it.
Well, a hurricane is a tsunami with water, so.
That's true. So, anyway, I'm going to go with Ralphie the buffalo. I also just love buffalo. South Dakota's close place in my heart because I took a family vacation there. That's
very nice.
Way off topic. So Brendan, give
if you
us
think
your
about
last
the backbone of society.
One. That was number four.
Oh, that was four. Okay, that's then true. Five. I'm taking the Stanford trees.
Okay, very okay. good. I don't know if that's their mascot. You need to look that up.
It's the Cardinals.
It's the Cardinals. You got to
Cardinal tree or no? Is it? I think it's the Cardinal tree.
It's the Cardinals.
Sam is going to fact check that while I give you my fifth pick, and then if it's wrong, we'll let him pick again.
Okay.
Because I don't think he was going to pick what I'm going to pick. maybe. The backbone of society, it's not built on the upper class, people doing heavy-duty jobs. It's people sacrificing. People doing their job for no pay. Tennessee Volunteers.
Oh, that's really well done. That's your best pick. That's a good logo.
Mike Howes did not react at all to pick. No emotion. If anybody was wondering, they're a Division I school in there, and it says
they're
in
the SEC. Yeah. All right. Mike, give us your final pick.
What does the fact check say?
Yeah, so it says that there's no such thing as a cardinal tree, so I will take it out. Do you want to give me at least I was honest. Credit to me for being honest and taking accountability. Yep. Everyone should also do that. But I'm going to go with for my pick. I just think that this one's just kind of a cool pick. This is something that Brendan's can't destroy. I'm going to go with the Boston College Eagles. I think that's a really solid team and a really solid pick.
No offense, but my Hurricanes are gonna destroy the Eagles.
I mean, Eagles can fly, Mike, so relax. Yeah, so that was really fun. We'll have a poll up soon on who had the best one. Please be on the lookout for that. Brendan, read out the teams one last time just so
I'll read my team. Point guard, no kidding. Tulane Green Wave, Lehman Lightning, Wilmington College Fighting.
Yeah, really strong picks. Two of them very hilarious, Brendan. But my final five were the Spartans, the Cougars, the Horned Frogs, the Boston College Eagles, and then finishing that out with the Buffalo. So I like my team. It's got a wide variety of people and animals, and they're all relevant schools, unlike someone who did that.
Sam, I give you credit for the Cougars. In my pre-podcast draft analysis, I found that the Cougars are the third deadliest wildcat according to A to Z Animals, with a 20% survival rate if attacked.
Don't survive tsunamis.
However, we got at starting point guard playing the Patrick Beverley role, the Fighting Irish.
little scrapper.
Then we got the USC Trojans, the Wake Forest Demon Deacons, the Miami Hurricanes, and rounding it out, the Florida Gators.
Yeah, and be on the lookout for Coach Loxley's potential top five. We are going to have to see what he has to say, and we'll throw that out on a graphic. But, again, really, really cool to have the head football coach of Maryland on, guys. I think it's really shown how far we've come and how far we still have to go. So this has been Under the Shell podcast. And, again, everybody take a listen, vote on the top five, and have a happy new year.